Grinding is a form of grinding is a prohibited melacha of Shabbat, and therefore, Hachamim forbade certain types of refuah on Shabbat because they were concerned that if a person is allowed to engage in medicinal pursuits on Shabbat, he will end up doing something which is prohibited on Shabbat by grinding herbs. That's what we introduced, and we also talked about pikuach nefesh last week. So we talked about pikuach nefesh, and we said that pikuach nefesh, we're not that's not part of this. Pikuach nefesh is a mitzvah, and we explained that when it comes to even the remotest chance of danger to life, then one is a duty to break Shabbat. And we said that actually, if you have a choice between yourself and a non-Jew breaking Shabbat, actually better do it yourself. So people don't come to think that really you shouldn't really be doing it, you're asking a non-Jew first. In order to demonstrate the importance of this concept, a Jew should do it himself and shouldn't pass it on to a non-Jew to break Shabbat. So that was the idea of pikuach nefesh. Today we want to talk about other types of illnesses which aren't life-threatening. So the best way to put this forward is the five levels of illnesses in halakha, in the context of Shabbat. There are five levels. The lowest level is called meichush ba'alma, which means something very light, let's say a light headache or a sore throat, chapped hand, something like that, bothering you. Something which bothers you, but you get on with your day-to-day life and you're not going to change your schedule heavily because of this small, bothersome condition that you have. That's level number one. Level two is called chole be'ever echad, which means one of your limbs is, it hurts you. You're ill in one limb. So for example, an earache or heartburn, something like that. So again, you can still continue and function, depending on the degree. But a normal earache, it's hurting you. It's more than just something bothersome. It's actually pain, giving you pain, but it's still not enough to the extent that you know you're going to be bedridden because of it. Level three is called chole kol gufo. Chole kol gufo means two possibilities: either a person is totally ill, flu, something along those lines, or he has a pain in one limb which is so severe that he can't function. So a person can have a toothache which is so severe that although the pain is only in his tooth, but his whole body feels it and he can't do anything. That's called chole kol gufo. You're ill, your entire body is ill, although really it's only one limb. But nonetheless, because you can't get out of bed, then that's considered level three. So a stomachache. If a person has a stomachache, which just his stomach's hurting him, that would be level two. Right? That's in one limb. It's hurting you. But if due to that stomachache you are bedridden, then that's level three. Level four is called sakanat ever, which means there is a risk of losing a limb. So let's say a finger's being cut off. And level five is pikuach nefesh, there's a danger to life. So let's go, these are the five levels. And let's go through what's permissible, what's prohibited in these five cases. So the first level, we said, is just a condition. Person's got this condition, as we said, sore throat, something very simple, where you're not going to be paying much attention to it. Your hands are chapped, something along those lines. So something like that, all medicine is prohibited. So smearing oil, let's say you've gone out in the cold and your hands are sore and they're bothering you, to pour oil on them and to work it into your hands is prohibited because of the concept of refuah, medicine on Shabbat, healing on Shabbat is not allowed. I wouldn't be allowed to do that. One has a slight headache, wants to take paracetamol, wouldn't be allowed to do so. Okay? That's level one. And therefore, if a person is just slightly under the weather, then he hasn't, that's actually in some degree, it's actually more severe than when you get more ill. Because when you get more ill, we'll see things get more lenient. But if it's just a slight headache or something along those lines, it's just level one, then one cannot take paracetamol because of the concern of what we said, that the Chazal made the prohibition not to do healing on Shabbat. If it's level two, i.e. a person has a illness in one limb, so he has an earache. Again, an earache which hasn't caused your entire body to be weak. You're in bed. So you can have a headache, and you can have a headache which knocks you out and you're in bed. Right? That's a migraine. That's something severe. And that's, of course, going to be level 3. Level 2, you have a headache and it's bothering you, but you can still get on with work. You know, the way I would put it, the difference between level 2 and level 3 is that level 2, you can perhaps still go to work and you can still get on with your day. Level 3, you know, you're not going to go to work. Right? That's you're in bed, you're in pain. So when you're at level 2, a Jew himself isn't allowed to do any healing. But you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do healing for you. To do something forbidden rabbinically. This is called Shvut, the Shvut v'makom tzar. You may ask a non-Jew to do something forbidden from the Hachamim when there's a bit of pain involved. So for example, a person has a nail, we've touched on this in the past, a person has a nail which is half detached, half or more detached. To pull it off is forbidden rabbinically. And let's say he's got pain from it, and it's bothering him. Yeah? Then he's allowed to ask a non-Jew to tear it off. Because asking a non-Jew is forbidden rabbinically. Tearing off yourself a nail which is already more than half detached isn't really considered attached from the Torah's perspective. Therefore, you're asking a non-Jew to do something forbidden rabbinically, and you may ask a non-Jew to do something forbidden rabbinically when there is pain involved. And therefore, if a person has a headache and he wants someone to come and do something for him forbidden rabbinically, for example, to pour some Vaseline on him, then one would be allowed to do so by asking a non-Jew to do something forbidden rabbinically if he has pain. Okay, but himself to take paracetamol, let's finish the 5 minutes, would not be permissible at this stage. Level 3 is chole kol gavon. This is important to know, this level, because this is when a person, as we said, is bedridden or he's in so much pain that he can't get on with his day. Now, in this case, the halacha is as follows. One may ask a non-Jew to do anything, even a doraita. So, let's say a person's in bed and he can't get out of bed. When I say he can't get out of bed, I don't mean literally he's in bed. I mean he's at home. He's walking around. Right? You can ask if you have a repair to make you a tea, to switch on the kettle, make you a tea. You can ask the repair to go and buy you from the chemist, to go and buy you medicine. Right? It's mutar, because you can ask him to do anything, even doraita, to do if a person is chole kol gufo, he's bedridden. You can ask a non-Jew to do anything. What about a Jew himself? Is he or somebody for him allowed to do something? So what's clear is, a Jew is allowed to do something forbidden from the Hachamim, with a Shinui preferably. But the final halakha is even more than that. The final halakha from Wadiya Paskin is that one isn't even a Jew isn't even allowed to do a Deoraita with a Shinui if he is a Chole Kol Gufa, which means as follows. Let's say a person is living alone, okay? Without any non-Jews. He's living, and it's Friday afternoon, feeling so good. Friday night, he's got a flu, and he's totally ill, and he feels he needs a bath, okay? He needs a hot bath. So he has to switch on the electricity and run the hot water, which is going to be forbidden by the Torah, because by you switching on, you're causing hot water to be boiled. It's definitely forbidden by the Torah. So, what can you do? So what you can definitely do is go and wait on the street and wait for a non-Jew to pass and call them in without any hinting explicitly, please come and switch on the bath for me. And that's it. That's fine. But let's say you're by yourself and nobody with you and you can't get out of bed. You're really not feeling well. It's 11, 12 o'clock at night. What are you going to do? There's no one walking down the street and you need this, you really feel bad, you need this bath and you don't feel good at all. What are you going to do? So then, well, in that situation where there's no goy present, a Jew himself is allowed to switch it on with a shinui, i.e. he'll lift up the tap with his teeth or with his elbow, knock it up with his elbow, and lift up the tap, and again, close it with his elbow. Because, as we've said, even a melacha d'oraita is permitted with a shinui only, with a chole, level 3, who is totally bedridden. This wouldn't be permitted for a person who just got a headache. Right?
First you can take medicine yourself though for that.
So all the more so. All the more so. Of course you can. Obviously. And definitely you can. Right? Certainly you can. But so at that stage a person is allowed to do all things forbidden from the Torah.
But you mentioned you can close the tap. Can I say you open it? Why can you close it?
Because otherwise, why can you close it?
Well, Isn't it like the taking the pregnant wife to the hospital, you can't close the door sort of thing situation?
Good question. Fine, I have to think about that. That's a good question.
You wouldn't treat yourself if you knew.
Yeah, I was thinking. So we say, but we only say that svara with pikuach nefesh. So there's a svara, and pikuach nefesh, the halakha is, let's say somebody who drives you to a hospital, according to him, you're allowed to drive him back. He's allowed to drive back himself. Why? Because we're concerned that if he wouldn't be allowed to drive back, then he would want to go in the first place. That we say with pikuach nefesh, because of the severity of pikuach nefesh. Whether that applies to Cholesh HaMizakana, I don't think that would be the case. So that's a good question. But that's important to understand, that with the person who is bedridden, he is allowed to ask to go to do anything, and he himself, preferably to do things in a rabbinic nature, but if he's really stuck and he's no go around, he may even do something forbidden by the Torah with a shinui, which dilutes it down to rabbinic level, and therefore he may do so on Shabbat. Similarly, the lights are on, and the person can't see. Again, he's lying in bed, and he's got a migraine, and he needs the lights off. What's he going to do? If there's a non-Jew, then you ask the non-Jew explicitly. Again, no hinting is necessary. Whenever we say you're allowed to ask the non-Jew, that means you can ask outright. So you ask the non-Jew to switch off the light. There's no non-Jew. So then you could switch the light off with your elbow. Now remember, if the lights are LED lights, it's definitely fine. No problem. Then you could... You wouldn't even have to ask a non-Jew, you could just push with your elbow, because LED, we said last week, is forbidden rabbinically, and you can do rabbinically with a shinui, that's for sure. But what I'm saying here is, even if it was like a filament bulb, that could be d'oraita, right? Even that, if there's no alternative, one would be allowed to switch it off with his elbow, again, for the health of the person who is bedridden. Fourth level, for all intents and purposes today, has the same level of pikuach nefesh. Although there is a difference in halakha, in olden times, but today, if there's a risk to a limb, i.e. let's say a person's finger has been cut off, although there is today the halakha, the blanket halakha, is that that's considered a pikuach nefesh. Therefore one may do anything. One may self-drive to hospital, in such a case, or get and ask another Jew to do so. Today, any risk to a limb, let's say a toe's been cut off or a leg has been cut off, right? One may do anything on Shabbat himself or others for him. So, what this means is what we have here really is three categories, you could say really. You've got pikuach nefesh or risk to a limb, everything is mutar. Then you have the middle stage of someone who's bedridden. Then we said you can do you can ask a goy to do anything, and even you can do a d'oraita with a shinui, with a deviation, if necessary. And then you've got this lower category, which is the person just got a slight condition, or he's got a pain in one limb. So then, generally speaking, medicine is prohibited. Having said that, there are certain things a person can do. So for example, let's say a person is constipated, and he's a bit in pain, you know. So that's level one, level two. That's not going to be bedridden from constipation, normally. So you wouldn't be allowed to take tablets to be able to help digestion. However, what he could do, this is called in halakha, derech bri'im. You can do something which normal people do. The Chachamim forbade you to do something which is purely medicinal in nature. But let's say I want to drink prune juice. Now I'm drinking the prune juice not because I enjoy prune juice. I'm drinking prune juice because I want to cure my constipation. So, in such a case, one is allowed to, because this is the normal thing to do. And therefore, this isn't considered engaging in medicine, although you are, technically speaking, curing yourself. But this is a normal thing to do. And vice versa, a person has diarrhea. He may eat bananas. Although, that's a...
But wouldn't you say diarrhea is number three? Because if you have really...
Yeah, you're right. You're probably right. Well, unless there's pain involved, if it's not bedridden. You're right, normally it will come together with the person who's... Normally it would, you're right. Similarly, a person with a toothache, it's not a strong toothache, but one tooth is hurting him, and it's bothering him, you could have some whiskey, or some vodka, or something along those lines, something strong in order to... But you wouldn't be allowed to gargle. Because again, that's going out of the norm. That no longer is derech bri'im, the way of normal people. Second thing is, second heter, is that if you started a course of medicine before Shabbat, you're allowed to continue it through Shabbat, even though it's not level 3, level 1, level 2. So that's why all antibiotics, even if you're curing something which isn't curing something which you're bedridden for, but because you've begun the course of treatment before Shabbat, you're allowed to continue. Similarly, a person has a course of treatment for his hands, chapped hands, something like that. So because you began the course of treatment before Shabbat, you may continue. And the logic is very simple. It's because the whole idea of this Gezerah, the decree of the Hachamim, was that a person in a moment of forgetfulness may make medicine. But here, because you began the treatment before Shabbat, we assume that you prepared for Shabbat. When do we say a person is anxious about his health? That's when on Shabbat he finds out about this condition. If he wants to heal, make it heal. But if he began before Shabbat, he may continue to do so. Two final points about this. There's lots more to talk about this, but I want to move on to Mukhtar. Two more points about this. What about exercising on Shabbat? Is a person allowed to exercise on Shabbat?
Depends. If it's fun.
Does he really like it or not?
In the spirit.
Yeah. Spirit is a personal thing. A person needs to decide about it. What's the halakha? The person had to go to exercise or not?
Pleasure, not
exercise.
No.
Let's say muscle building. Why? What's wrong with it? So what's clear is to exercise, to sweat, in order to perspire, that's prohibited. Because that was a form of medicine. People exercise to perspire, and of course we know that, from a medical perspective, perspiring is always very good for the body, releases all the toxins. So to exercise for the purpose of perspiring, that is prohibited. But to exercise for fun, for leisure, or even to exercise, the person wants to, whatever the reason is, you know, exercising because he likes exercising on Shabbat, there is no halachic grounds to prohibit it. Now, as you correctly said, I wouldn't advise it, okay? It's not a wise thing to do on Shabbat because it's not really what Shabbat's meant to be for. And also it causes you to be uncomfortable afterwards, you want to have a shower afterwards, and then you could have a cold shower after, theoretically you could have a cold shower on Shabbat. But it's just not really in the spirit of Shabbat to do so. But a person who is on, let's say a person is on this crazy diet and this, he's got this course where he has to do 3 weeks of exercise, he has to do it every day, and he's doing it just for that purpose, not all to sweat, to heal, but just for the purpose of exercise, then strictly speaking, it's wrong to say that it's prohibited. Strictly speaking, the halakha is one is allowed to do exercise on Shabbat. To jogging, mutar on Shabbat. Again, mi'ikar hadin, spirit of Shabbat, I'm not so sure about. Okay? Spirit of Shabbat, that's okay. Then. Fine. Yeah? Fine. Similarly, massage, the same thing. Massage is the same thing, yeah? Massage in order to perspire, that wouldn't be permissible. But a massage, just to feel good, again, strictly speaking, is mutar to be done on Shabbat.
But they use oil.
Oh, because that's the next point. So is a person allowed to use cream on Shabbat? Okay? So leaving aside issues of medicine, is a person allowed to use cream on Shabbat? So generally speaking, halacha is not allowed to use cream on Shabbat. The reason being is memareh, for spreading out, smoothening. You don't have to smooth things like they smooth the hides in the Mishkan. So you're not to smooth the oil on Shabbat. However, the halakha is that this only applies when you're smoothening something out. For example, the Gemara gives the example of a wax to close a hole in a barrel. But you're doing it for a purpose. And you want that level, you want it to be smooth. If, however, you smoothen something out to the extent it gets worked into the thing you are smoothing it on, then memareach doesn't apply to that. Which is why, if a person takes a lot of Vaseline or a lot of oil and smears it over his hand, that's prohibited. Because you're going to end up having a layer above your hand. And that layer, you're smoothening it. The person takes a bit each time. And each time he works it into his hand, works it into the body. So there's no layer on top of the body. It's been worked out, the oil or the cream has been worked into the body. In the Hawadar, it's very clear, that's mutar. That doesn't fall under memarech. Memarech is when there is a layer left over, there's something there, the end of it. When you're working the cream into the body, it's getting absorbed by it, no one is allowed to use cream. Again, you're going to have the issues of medicine on Shabbat. So you wouldn't be allowed to use the cream for your chapped hand on Shabbat. But, oil, if the oil is being worked into the body and there's no layer of oil at the end of it, then, clear in halakha, one is allowed to do so on Shabbat.
Suntan lotion is okay.
Again, suntan lotion, a little bit, and has to be worked in. Now again, suntan lotion will not be permissible after you've come out and you're feeling burnt. You've been in the sun and you feel burnt. That would be level one, level two. Right? That's choleb evrechad or mechush. Then you wouldn't be allowed to apply the cream because of medicine. If you're doing it before, then that's an act of prevention. You're not healing yourself. You haven't done anything. Then you've got no problem with medicine. And mitzad memareach, because you're working it into the body, and there's no layer on top, then it would be permissible to do so.
With oil, isn't there an assumption that if it's liquid in form generally, then there's no possibility of making a layer?
True. Oil anyway. There's three levels. There's types of things which are very thin, runny oil. That's mutar for sure.
Yeah.
Then you've got very thick stuff, like Vaseline. And then you've got the creams which are in between, which aren't runny but aren't thick. So those three levels, if it's runny, totally runny, that's mutar. If it's thick, it's forbidden by the Torah. And if it's the medium, then it's forbidden by the Chachamim. So you're right. If it's a runny oil, different types of oil. If it's a very runny oil, then that would be definitely, that you could do it, you're right. That's a good point. If it's a very runny oil, right, then that memarech doesn't apply to it. Memarech only applies something thick, or even a bit, semi-loose, semi-thick. Sorry?
Viscous, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, like types of creams, yeah. But it doesn't...
You use a spray, though.
Right, yeah. So, that's something to be aware of. And finally, thermometers on Shabbat. Thermometers are forbidden to be used on Shabbat. Why? Because using a thermometer is a form of measuring. And measuring, all types of measuring are forbidden on Shabbat because it's linked to the prohibition of kotev, of writing. When a person measures things, and when he writes it down, therefore, all forms of measuring are prohibited on Shabbat to be done. However, of course, if there's a chole involved, chole kol gufo, then level 3, then we said you can do drabbanan, therefore you'd be allowed to use a thermometer. However, if you're only level 2, so you just got a slight temperature, you yourself wouldn't be allowed to use a thermometer, but you could ask the non-Jew to take your temperature for you. If you are concerned, by the way, that you know there's any chance of a threat to the life, then of course it would be more time to do so. Yeah.
Can I ask, if you're
going to
use a thermometer and the person is caring, for example, for an elderly family member who requires certain, say, lotions or creams due to medical reasons, are you allowed to administer that? Or?
So, is an elderly person or a child, I didn't talk about this, an elderly person, a frail elderly person, or a child under the age of 6 or 7, have an immediate status of level 3.
Okay.
Of Chole Shem Bosatan, immediate status.
What age child?
So that's a discussion in the Poskim. Some say Bar Mitzvah, but it's about 6, 7, the age where they no longer need their parents, you know, for little things.
And if you put cream all week, yeah,
that is something
part of your routine,
were
you allowed to use it on Shabbat?
So that's what we said. If you had to prepare before Shabbat, and something you do every day, it's mutar. But again, you have to put it in very small amounts.
So you have to dump it back? Tap it?
You can rub it in. It has to be rubbed in as opposed... It has to be totally rubbed in as opposed to there being a layer on top of the body. If you take a lot of cream and you rub it, you'll end up with a layer on top.
So it's better to use cream than oil, because oil...
No, oil is better. Mm-hmm. Oil is definitely better. Because oil is totally mutar.
Okay.
Runny oil I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Runny oil, there's no prohibition from the perspective of the mareach of smearing. There is a problem with tzadrifuah for medicine. But
it's part of your...
if it's then, there's no medicine either. Okay, good.
So for level 2, you can do a...
Shvut, the shvut. No, not yourself. The shvut, the shvut.
Yeah.
No, come south. You can ask a goat to drop it.
Okay.
Sorry, going back to elderly person. Elderly people have different disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Some can be very active and go around, but for certain other things, they may need creams, lotions, potions, whatever. Are we...
You just take somebody over
70
and that's it?
No, it's not like, it's not a blanket. It's talking about needs. I imagine it's talking about needs for the related to the thing, not just because he's an old man and everything.
So they're not necessarily in that case. They're not.
Lichora, I would
say.
They
might move around a
correct.
Lot, but they may have needs because
correct.
Of their skin or whatever.
Correct. Okay, moving. We have to move on. We have to move on to Muktzeh. Okay, so that's the end of Refuah. Now we have half an hour left to deal with Muktzeh. Okay? So, some people will say it's basic. I want to lay out the fundamentals of Muktzeh. Of course, Muktzeh is a huge topic in Shabbat. But I just want to lay out the fundamentals of Muktzeh, the different categories of Muktzeh, and also the permissible ways of moving Muktzeh. Now, firstly, what does this word Muktzeh mean? So, you're probably used to hearing the word Muktzeh. Okay, the correct way of saying it is Muktzeh. And it comes from the word Katzeh. Katzeh means an edge, means to be set aside. The word Muktzeh means it's been set aside, it hasn't been designated for Shabbat. Okay? And Muktzeh is totally rabbinic in nature. Okay, it's a rabbinic enactment, and they prohibited certain things to be moved. There is nothing which is prohibited to be touched. Muktzeh does not mean you cannot touch something. You are allowed to touch Muktzeh. Muktzeh means you cannot move objects. You are allowed to touch something which is Muktzeh. If, however, by touching it, you're going to move it, and something very light, by touching it and moving it, then you can't touch it. By touching it, you're moving it. But if you are touching something like a car, something along those lines, then that is permissible to be done. Sorry, everything. That's permissible to touch. Again, provided you don't move it. Because the prohibition of Muktzeh is not to touch. The prohibition of Muktzeh is not to move something which was not designated before Shabbat. Now, what's the reason for Muktzeh? Why did the Hachamim make this whole concept of Muktzeh? Why did they prohibit this? There are four reasons given. One by the Ra'avad, three by the Rambam. The Ra'avad says very straightforward. He says the reason why Hachamim prohibit Muktzeh is because to limit the amount of... things that we can carry on Shabbat as a safeguard for the melacha chotza'ah. Melacha chotza'ah is the prohibition of carrying on Shabbat, and the less you can carry, the less you can move on Shabbat, the less chance you have of carrying on Shabbat. Okay, that's the reason the Ra'avad gives. The Rambam ever gives three totally different reasons. The first reason the Rambam gives is a general safeguard from prohibition. He says because lots of the muktzeh things are things which if you use them you may come to do something wrong. So, for example, a pen is muktzeh because you may come to write with it. Scissors are muktzeh because you may come to cut with it. Scales are muktzeh because you'll come to measure with it, etc. So, according to the Rambam, the reason of muktzeh is it's a general safeguard, not specifically from carrying, a general safeguard to generally protect the person from committing prohibited acts on Shabbat. Second reason the Rambam gives is the reason of muktzeh is a detachment from mundane and weekday activities. So we know, for example, we haven't discussed this in these series, it's beyond the scope, but there's a concept of the way you walk on Shabbat isn't meant to be the way you walk during the week. It's a different type of walking, different type of clothes you wear on Shabbat, a different spirit to Shabbat. And so the Rambam says, and Gemara doesn't say this, the Rambam adds this on, he says, like we say, the way you, and also the way you speak on Shabbat shouldn't be the same as the way you speak during the week. You know, you don't talk about business, about politics on Shabbat, right? Your speech on Shabbat is more refined. Similarly, your tiltul, your carrying on Shabbat, shouldn't be the same tiltul as what you carry during the week. Because even if things which you're not going to come to commit an issur with, but just the less things that you have to carry, the more holy Shabbat becomes, the less connected you are with mundane activities. And so, you know, tools... You know, even leaving aside that by using by touching tools you may come to build on Shabbat, leaving that aside, even if you know there was no concern that you're going to come to build something, but just the idea of engaging with these things on Shabbat, it just takes away from the spirit of Shabbat. It takes away from the holiness of Shabbat, and therefore they forbade Muktzeh. The final reason that Rambam gives is to ensure everyone experiences Shabbat, because he writes, some people don't do well. Right? Some people are wealthy enough. He says they call them the tayalim. The tayalim means those who roam around. Yeah, they just spend the day walking around. Right? Leisure. People who spend the week at leisure. So such people don't do well. So for them, what's Shabbat going to be? I don't do well during the week either. So what's Shabbat going to be for me? And therefore, they made Muktzeh so he also can experience prohibitions and can experience spirit of Shabbat. These are four reasons given the Rishonim. One reason is safeguards from carrying. Second reason is a general safeguard for all prohibitions. Third one is that Shabbat shouldn't become mundane. And the fourth reason is to make a clear distinction between Shabbat and rest of the week for those who aren't doing work during the week. Now, there are seven categories of Muktzeh. Okay? Don't be scared. It's very straightforward. Okay, very simple principles. There are seven categories of Muktzeh. We'll go through them one by one and we'll talk about them. So the first category of Muktzeh, and the most lenient one, is called Kli Shemelachto Li'isur. Kli Shemelachto Li'isur means a utensil whose primary purpose is for something prohibited. So what's an example of that? What's an example for utensil whose primary purpose is for something prohibited on Shabbat?
A sieve.
A hammer. A sieve. A pen. Why? Because a hammer is building. Its primary use is to do something forbidden, to build. A pen, its primary use is to write. A sieve, its primary use is to do borer, prohibited. Okay? It's a selection. Therefore, that is category number one, that you're not allowed to move a kli shemelachto li'isur, a utensil whose primary use is something forbidden on Shabbat, you're not allowed to move it on Shabbat. However, one is allowed to move a kli shemelachto li'isur for two purposes. Either it's called the tzorich gufo or the tzorich mekomo. The tzorich gufo means I'm using it for its own sake, i.e. a hammer. True, the primary purpose of a hammer is to build, okay? You use it during... when you're building, you use a hammer or you measure. But if you want to use it, you want to crack a nut open. This is the example of the Gemara. You want to crack a nut open. So then you may use the hammer. You're allowed to use something Muktzeh, which is a kli, which is a utensil. You're allowed to use it in order to do something permissible on Shabbat. So a hammer, although a hammer generally speaking is a Muktzeh, you can't move it. But if you're taking a hammer to crack open a nut, you are allowed to do so. A frying pan, an empty frying pan, is Muktzeh. You should know this. Yeah? An empty pan with the pots of the food in isn't Muktzeh. Therefore, even when you finish the food, it's not Muktzeh. Because when Shabbat came in, it wasn't Muktzeh. Right? The defining moment for Muktzeh is always when Shabbat began. If something wasn't Muktzeh when Shabbat began, it normally will not become Muktzeh during the course of Shabbat. If it was Muktzeh during the beginning of Shabbat, it normally will stay Muktzeh for the rest of Shabbat. Normally. Not in all circumstances. And therefore, a pot with food inside, you finish the food, it's not Muktzeh, you can still move it around, you can put it in the sink, you can move. An empty pot, what's the primary purpose of a pot, of a pan? To cook. Cooking is forbidden, so it's Muktzeh. You can't move a pot of a pan on Shabbat, which is empty, and which was empty when Shabbat began. However, let's say I need to store something. On Shabbat I realize I've got apples lying around, I want to store them. So I want to bring it to the table, I've got nothing to serve with. You're allowed to put it into the pan. So using it for not the purpose which is prohibited, for a different purpose, that is mutar to be done. The second heter for kli shemelachto li'isur is the tzorich mekomo, which means if you want its place. So let's say you have on your bed, you come to bed, and you see on your bed, you have a pen there. You have your hammer there. And you don't want to go to sleep. You don't have a hammer on you while you're sleeping. You're allowed to pick it up, lift it up and take it away. If you need the place and the space of the mukta item, the kli shemelachto li'isur, one is allowed to take it and move it away on Shabbat. So these are two ways you can move in a normal manner, you can move a kli shvachto liyisur, which means a utensil whose primary purpose is for something prohibited, you can move it either because you want to use it for something permissible, or you can move it because you want its space. And once you've picked it up to use, by the way, doesn't mean once you've taken it off, you have to drop it. Once you've picked it up and it's permissible to pick it up, then you can take it, as long as it's in your hand, you can take it to where you want. You don't have to drop it the nearest place, you can take it and put it downstairs, put it away. Since when you picked it up, it's permissible to do so, you may continue to take it and put it back wherever it belongs. However, you're not allowed to move a kli shvachto liyisur for its own sake. So let's say you were working late Friday afternoon in the garden, and you left your garden tools outside there, and you thought the weather's going to be sunny the next day, and then suddenly on Shabbat morning you look out and it's pouring with rain, and your tools are going to get damaged. Tools are going to get damaged, expensive tools. You want to bring them in, but you can't do, because that's mukteh. You're not taking it in for the space, or for its use, therefore one would be prohibited to bring it in. However, having said that, one could be clever. What one could do is one could turn around to his family and say, let's play a game in the garden. Yeah, then this has to be serious. I mean, you can't just do this and not do it. What I mean is, this is serious, you do this, yeah? I want to play a game in the garden. So I need the space here. Again, if it's on one side of the garden and it's in the corner and you can't use it, otherwise it's bang in the middle. And let's say you would want to play something together, yeah? And you can't play it because it's blocking it. Then you could play the game in order to move it in, play your game and then go back in. Okay? Then you would be allowed to do something to in order to move the mukta, but provided you're doing it genuinely. True, you can create the want to play the game, but it has to be genuine. You want to play the game. You want to do something, you want to use the space of the garden, and you'd be allowed to.
So you'd have to finish the game.
Yeah, you'd have to use the space. You're not just, you say, let's use the space, bring it in, then we no longer need the space. Yeah? Right?
Now, they don't agree to play the game because it's wet outside, right? <What's that?
laughs> Yeah. Fine. Or you could decide you want to, you know, you've got a hammer outside, expensive hammer lying outside. You can decide you want to eat a coconut now. You've got a coconut in the fridge. So you could decide to bring in the hammer to open up the coconut. And you open the coconut, you eat the coconut. The reason this is the more lenient mukta is because it's a kli. It already is a utensil. And naturally, someone who is a utensil is less rejected. The whole underlying logic of mukta is that it has to have been prepared for Shabbat in order to use it. Something which wasn't prepared and ready for Shabbat, you can't use. Now a kli, something which is a utensil, naturally, because it's a utensil, isn't rejected, isn't pushed away. And therefore, as long as you're doing it, the tzorach mekomo, for its space, or its own use, as long as it's not prohibited use, one is allowed to move this mukta in a normal way and actually use it on Shabbat. Similarly, I'll end this final point on this type of mukta, a fan. For scheme say a fan isn't something expensive, a fan is a kli shemachto liyisur, therefore one may move a fan. One may move a fan on Shabbat, provided there's no danger in it's coming out of the socket. So let's say, you know, in the summer, you position it in one place, you want to move the fan, right? You want to move the direction of where it's blowing. One is allowed to do so because you're moving it, the tzorech gufo, for its own use. And therefore, one is allowed to do so on Shabbat. But if there's any danger, and by touching it, you may disconnect it from the socket, then, of course, that would be strictly asur to do so.
Same for a lamp.
Same for a lamp. Lamp's going to be a bit different.
What if you want to turn the pan away from you? It's too windy in the room.
Again, it'll be mutar because you need the space, you need your space. And it's impeding on your space.
It's coming away, it's just wind.
Yeah, but it's annoying you. Yeah, yeah. So that's a figurative mekomon, that'll be mutar as well. So that's level one of, one type of mukteh. That's one type of mukteh, kishvach tol yisur. Second type of mukteh is called mukteh mehamat chisaron kis, which means mukta, more severe mukta, which is prohibited because it's something expensive. So something expensive, something fragile, again, you reject more, you're going to put it away, you're going to have a less chance that you've designated before Shabbat. So the example given in the poskim is a shechita knife, or a brit, the mohel's knife. So these are very expensive things, and you have to be very fragile and sensitive with them. And these things you don't leave lying around. And if, of course, if you're a mohel and you have a brit knife, of course you can take the knife. But if you you left your knife lying around, your mohel knife or shechita knife lying around, these are expensive things, and even though it's kli, even though it's a utensil, because of its value, it gets a higher status mukta, and that's absolutely prohibited to move on Shabbat. One cannot move it. Not only can you not move it because you want to protect it, but even if you want to use it, let's say you run out of knives, and for some reason you want to use your shechita knife to cut your apple open, right? Or you want to use it for whatever purpose, then one isn't allowed to do so. Because muktzeh mechamat chisaron kis is absolutely out of bounds. One isn't allowed to remove that, even for its space or for its actual use. Now, a very interesting question, which the final halakha is also clear on it. So let's, what other examples are there of chisaron kis, of this type of muktzeh? So I would say a computer, yeah, a washing machine, these types of things. These are expensive things, you don't move around for no reason. What would you say about a phone? Okay? Is a phone a kli shemelachto yisur? Or is a phone muktzeh mechamat chisaron kis? I'll tell you a huge difference between these two. Because if you say a phone is only a kli shemelachto yisur, that means you can move it for its space or for its use. Now you're not going to have much use of a phone on Shabbat if it's off. But what can be very important is its space. How can its space be important? Let's say you use your alarm clock on Shabbat. You ever during the week use your alarm clock using your phone. Some alarm clocks don't go off. Right? Or let's say do go off, but when you wake up, you want to straight away leave the room. You don't want to wake other people up. Or let's say you want to go back to sleep. You don't want the alarm clock ringing for too long. If a phone is a kli shemelachto yisur, it's a utensil which is it's prohibited to use, then you could move it for its space, i.e. I want the room. I'm sleeping in the room. The alarm clock's gone off. Now, I want the room to be quiet. So I would be allowed to take out the phone and go take it somewhere else. If, however, a phone is a muktzeh mechamat chisaron kis, it's a muktzeh because it's something expensive, and you couldn't move it even though it's giving you a headache in your bedroom. Right? If it was giving you such a headache to the extent that you're bedridden, then you could move it. Yeah? but generally, yeah, but you wouldn't normally be allowed to move it. Now, what would you say? So this is something that's, you know, it's very difficult to, you know, because this is a really new thing, which, you know, haven't been discussed. But I think the old Nokia phones, the old simple phones, I think we could agree on that. That's a klish machtori yisur. That's just a utensil which has a forbidden use. And therefore one would be allowed to, you know, move it on Shabbat. But I think an iPhone, something like that, an expensive phone, I think that's going to be muktzeh mechamat chisaron kis. That's going to be an expensive muktzeh, and therefore one wouldn't be allowed to use it or move it, even for its space. You can put a pillow in it. You can put a pillow in it. Yeah, you reduce. Okay. That we'll talk about in a second. But again, then you have to kick it all the way out of the room. Yeah, you could do that.
Like in the drawing.
Yeah, you could. We'll talk about that in a second. Yeah.
Well, you can ask the family to come and play.
No,
it's expensive.
How's it going to help? No,
to determine whether it's chisaron kis, so you kiss, are you looking at the person themselves?
No, so it's the objective value. I mean, it's how people normally view something like this.
Like a change in in years' time when an iPhone, let's say, maybe
becomes like a. Yeah, I agree. 100%. This is why these things are so difficult to give a final ruling about. Because it depends on so many factors, it depends on each year these things can change.
Rabbi, even the dumb phones, that's the person's phone, it's very precious.
So to them, it's objective.
So yeah, it's. Well,
if it's somebody's phone, it's. It's precious to whoever they are.
It's value, it's expense, it's, you know, money. Yeah, true, you yourself, for you it's got sentimental value, but is it, yeah? Now, another important distinction between Ashkenazim Sephardim and this Mu'tzeh is with regards to something like a painting. So Ashkenazim hold something which you don't touch, you don't move. So one of these, for example, look at these paintings here on the side. It's something like it's not moved. They hold that's Mu'tzeh, and you couldn't move that on Shabbat. But we hold something only becomes Mu'tzeh Mahamat Chisaron Kis only if it's a Klish Machtoli Yisur. Only if it's something which is prohibited, it's got a prohibited use, and it's expensive, then it becomes Mu'tzeh Mahamat Chisaron Kis. But if it's got no prohibited use, like a beautiful painting, although I never touch it, and it's very expensive, that's not Mu'tzeh Mahamat Chisaron Kis. Mu'tzeh Mahamat Chisaron Kis is only something which is expensive and valuable, which is already has a prohibited use. And without its value, would be a Klish Machtor Yisur. Like a phone. A phone, if not for its value, would still be a Klish Machtor Yisur. It's used for prohibited things. You can't use your phone on Shabbat. Or Shechita knife. Something like that. Where it's used for something forbidden. You can't check on Shabbat. Or Milah. You can't cut. You can't draw blood on Shabbat. Right? But if it's something which is permitted to be used on Shabbat, and only because it's of its value, you don't touch it on Shabbat, that doesn't become Mu'tzeh, that's permissible to be used on Shabbat. Someone may move a painting around on Shabbat.
I remember that you could move a painting that wasn't hung on the wall, but once it is hung, then you can't.
That's Ashkenazim hold. Because you've hung on the wall, you've designated it. And you put it aside, you're not going to touch it anymore. Are we saying no, because it hasn't got any, it's got no Isur to it. Therefore, it's mutar to do so. So, on main move a painting on Shabbat. That's clear. That's all Sfaradim hold this. I'm not talking about rearranging your whole living room now. Yeah. I'm talking about you just want to move it. You see it's about to fall off and you want to move it or something.
What about like picture frames? Same thing.
Yeah, same thing. Once you're allowed to move them on Shabbat, no problem at all. Right. If it's electrical, then you wouldn't be allowed. You know, you get those electrical things that you can't. That's Mu'tzeh. Yeah?
Like a vase.
A vase, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So the Ashkenazim hold if it's an expensive vase,
right.
Expensive one, then you can't move it.
Yeah, I mean,
it can be
expensive.
Yeah, but for us, we hold that since it's no prohibited use to it, it's allowed to move it. Okay, that's number two. Remember, we said we've got seven to get through. Number three, the third type of Mu'tzeh is called Mu'tzeh Mahamat Gufo. Mu'tzeh Mahamat Gufo means it's something which has no use and it's not a kli. So, typical examples given in halakha is sand, earth, stones and pebbles. These things are again totally out of bounds and cannot be moved on Shabbat unless you designated it. So what you could do, if you're away on holiday, take some sand in before Shabbat and say, I'm designating this, I want to use it on the course of Shabbat for the kids to play indoors with. Right, that you could do. But if you haven't designated it, you can't just take a stone off the street and touch it. You can't pick up a stone off the street on Shabbat or a rock, something like that. That is Mu'tzeh Mahamat Gufo. That means it's not a kli and it's got no use. That's called Mu'tzeh Mahamat Gufo. Similarly, raw food, flour, raw fish, raw potatoes, right? No,
it's not usable.
No. Frozen, because you could do. What do you mean?
If it's non-edible.
But even when you defrost it.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a chum, true. But yeah, so if you could defrost it, it's only in Mu'tzeh, then you. Yeah, something like that. It's not called a kli, right? And it's got no use. That's Mu'tzeh Mahamat Gufo that cannot be used. So you have flour in the cupboard. You can't move that sugar. And what happens if you need to get the sugar behind it? And you've got a problem. And you have to move it with your elbow. Move it in a strange way. You cannot pick the flower of Shabbat. So, yeah, it's number three. Okay, I'm really making it short now.
Sorry, you said raw fish, you can.
No, raw fish, unless it's salted, like that type of fish where you can eat it. Oh, you're saying today's sushi, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, true, that wouldn't be mukta. Yeah. I was talking about raw fish, real raw fish, where, you know, like a raw piece of salmon.
Wow.
Yeah. Number four is called Mukta Mahamat Isur. That means a mukta due to an isur incumbent on it. So, for example, fruit that fell off a tree on Shabbat, mukta. You can't move that. You can't move
fruit
it. Fruit, which fell off the tree on Shabbat.
Fell off the tree,
you cannot move it on Shabbat, because you're not allowed to move such fruit on Shabbat, because you may come to pick off more fruit. That's called Muktzah Machamat Isur. Because of a potential prohibition, nothing wrong with an apple, it's edible, it's not a Klisha Machtol Isur, it's got no expensive value, but because it may draw you to another Isur, you're not allowed to move it on Shabbat. Number five is Muktzah Machamat Mitzvah, something designated because of a mitzvah. So Arba Minim is the typical example. Yeah, you can't move a lulav on Shabbat because of the mitzvah, if it's designated for the mitzvah, and that mitzvah is not performed on Shabbat, and therefore you don't have to move the lulav on Shabbat. An etrog, by the way, you are allowed to move on Shabbat. You are allowed to move on Shabbat. Sometimes people on Sukkot, they leave their lulav and etrog lying around. The lulav you can't move. Somebody leaves his lulav on the table on Shabbat, and you come Shabbat Chol HaMoed, you can't move it. The only thing you could do is push it off with your elbow, but you wouldn't want to do that either, because you might make it pasul by doing so. Right? So you can't, you're stuck. That's why people should always put their lulav away before Shabbat Chol HaMoed. Etrog, however, you can leave on the table, etrog you can move around.
Why?
Because etrog you can smell it. Its primary enjoyment of an etrog is its smell. And that you can smell on Shabbat.
Thought actually on Sukkot you can't, because the primary use of the etrog is for Arba Minim. I've seen such an opinion actually. Not to say I'm offended at all by problems on etrog.
You're right, but you what do you mean? You can't, the etrog, you can't even smell on
Shabbat
on
Sukkot. I might be wrong, maybe, but I saw not.
No, because no. It's only Muktzeh for its Ikar. Its Ikar, what's the Ikar thing you do with an etrog?
No.
It's the eating.
Yeah.
You may be getting a hadas, because its primary use of hadas is its smelling, and for hadas you can't. Hadas does become Muktzeh on Shabbat Chol HaMoed. Why? Because the primary use of hadas is to smell. And that's Muktzeh l'mitzvato, that's set aside for mitzvah. Etrog, its primary use is eating. And therefore you can't eat the etrog during Sukkot. Mm. Right? But to smell it, it's not Muktzeh for the smelling. Number six is Nolad. Nolad is something which is created on Shabbat, you can't touch. So let's say a goy milked a cow on Shabbat. You can't have that. Or an egg. That's all the second bait is about. An egg which has been born on Shabbat, you can't touch. Then you have basis. Okay, well, we're not going into basis. Basis is number seven, that's a base. If something is a base for Muktzeh, then you can't move the base either. But even types of Muktzeh, important to know, I'll end with this. Even types of Muktzeh, which are prohibited to be used on Shabbat, there are two ways you can move it. So we said Kli Shvachtol Yisur you're allowed to use for its space or for its primary use, okay? But everything else you can't move, even for its space. So you have an expensive camera on your bed, you cannot pick it up and move it. Right? Because that's the level, that's expensive Muktzeh. Right? Somebody left the camera out on your bed, you can't move it on Shabbat. So what are you going to do? You have to sleep on it. So there's two things you can do. One thing is called Tiltul Min HaTzad. Tiltul Min HaTzad means you don't move the camera itself. You move something else and thereby indirectly move the Muktzeh item. So what you could do is pick up your sheet, pick up the blanket and move the camera and shake it off and then bring it back. But you're only allowed to move such Muktzeh only when you're doing it not for the Muktzeh item itself. So you couldn't move it off and carry it indirectly because you want to protect. You're scared someone's going to come in, the cleaner's going to come into your room in the hotel and they take the camera, and then if you want to move it and hide it in the safe, you want to go and shake it into the safe. That you couldn't do. You're only allowed to do Tiltul Min HaTzad, indirect moving of Muktzeh, only when you're doing it not for the Muktzeh item itself. Is that clear? If you're doing it for the Muktzeh item itself, then you cannot move even indirectly the Muktzeh item.
Same with the basis situation.
Correct.
Yeah.
However, tiltul begufor, strange tiltul, which means you blow it away, or you elbow it away, or you kick it away, that you can move under all circumstances. That you can move even if you're moving it for the muktzeh item itself. So you could kick the camera away under the bed, that you would be allowed to do. Or you could blow away, let's say, or you have some coins. You found some coins, you found a note, a money note on Shabbat, it's muktzeh. You wouldn't be allowed to touch that. really nice movement, I mean. But what you could do is kick it away with your foot, although you're doing it to save the money, doing it for the purpose of the muktzah item, you could kick that away on the side and then can't pick it up after Shabbat. Because that's still tul b'gufo, an unusual way you're allowed to do. So that's just a very brief overview of muktzah. As you can imagine, there are so many details to this, to the whole concept of muktzah. But generally speaking, what we've done is we've explained the word muktzah, we've gone through the four reasons of muktzah, the seven different categories of muktzah, and what we need to know is the only thing which is mutar is a klish machtol isur, a utensil which you're allowed to move for its space or for its place, or for its use, permissible use. Everything else you're not allowed to move at all on Shabbat, unless you're doing it with your body in an indirect in a strange manner, you're allowed to move it, or you're moving it indirectly, i.e. you're picking something else and moving it, then you may do it only if you're not moving it for the purpose of the muktzah item itself.
What you mentioned before about the apple or pear falling down from the tree.
You can't touch that on Shabbat.
What if you want to play games like Dada said? If you want to use that area to...
You still couldn't move it because you only said you're allowed to move something for its area, only the first muktzah. Kish vachtole, kli, only if it's a utensil. It's like garden tool, something like that. No.
You said you can kick it away.
What you could do is kick it away.
Yeah.
You kick it away. That's the only thing you could do in that case. All muktzah you can kick away and move away. So you come to shul on Shabbat, somebody's left his pen on the table. So a pen is kish vachtole isur. So that you could pick up and put on the side. Right? Because you want the space, you want to put your chumash down. So you can pick it up and put it on the side. You don't have to pick it up and then drop it. You can pick it up, but then normally you can move around, walk around the shul. And if somebody comes to shul and somebody's left his iPhone on the table, okay, then you're in a bit of trouble. If you want the space, a landline phone wouldn't be thoughts, but not valuable. Right? But so then you could, if you wanted the space.
No, you don't want the
muktzah
thing. You don't want the space.
No, you can't move it for no reason. No. You can't move. You can only move it if you need the
space.
Yeah. So you want to eat there, or you want to use the telephone for something, not for the purpose of calling. Yeah. So if you only wanted the space, you could do it. So you come to show something that has iPhone on the table. So seemingly you couldn't pick it up to move. What could you do?
Leave the table.
The table is basis. It was a base.
Mm-hmm.
All you're going to have to do is, yeah, it's the only thing you could do really. Yeah. Your elbows and put it and drop it somewhere on the side.
Could you ask a goy?
So you ask a goy to do a banan only if it's makom mitzvah, meaning if you've got nowhere else to sit, and there's no mitzvah here, you have to move it. Right? Because you can just cover it, or. Right?
Could you give awareness?
You could give a remiss to do so, yeah.
You mean tissue?
Yeah, you could do a remiss.
Ask them to do it with chinoy.
You're laughing. That's a huge discussion, man. We're going to talk about it in 2 weeks' time. If you ask a goy to do a doraita with a chinoy, is that considered two drabanans? Or do we say that because a goy is doing it all one drabanan, it doesn't make no to do it? That's a big question, that. It's a huge question in the poskim.
If you ask a goy to ask a goy.
That's the same. You're asking a goy to ask another goy. Isn't it all discussed in the poskim?
You have to teach the guy laws of muktzah.
Why not?
What do you mean teaching the laws of muktzah?
Teach them halakha.
Oh, yeah, generally that's well, not actually, but there's a purpose for it. Okay, so to summarize, what we did today is we have five parts of medicine, thing about muktzah. Hashem, we'll take a break next week, and be Erev Purim, the day before Purim on Tuesday night next week, the fast on Wednesday, and Purim Wednesday night. So with Hashem, we will resume and conclude this series. Bezat Hashem, 2 weeks' time, Tuesday, the 26th of March. And Bezat Hashem, we will hopefully have details of a new series then, beginning after Pesach, Bezat Hashem. If you want to stay tuned with the upcoming series or other events, then please feel free to fill out your details on a piece of paper there, and you'll be kept updated with the next series. So this show will continue in 2 weeks' time. Have a great Purim, everyone. Be happy.